Hey, man. How's it going, y'all? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Oops, I was supposed to have already written a blog entry by now. I do that sometimes. Today's show, Bojan Budimac. They don't use CHs. They just use Cs to make a ch sound over there in Bosnian, Serbian, Croatian, something. 12 to 2, that's right now. 12 to 2 Eastern Time. That's when I'm live here on the Liberty Radio Network on the weekdays. It's libertarian foreign policy mostly. Yeah, you might like it if you hate wars and stuff. Mostly what I do is I interview journalists and, you know, sometimes lawyers and professors and experts about the wars, mostly writers. And, yeah, Bojan, he is, it's Bojan. If I remember it right, he is a Serb reporting from, he's a Serb who writes for a Bosnian newspaper. Reporting out of Turkey. So we're going to have him on to talk about this massive suicide attack that took place over the weekend at this peace rally. And the aftermath and the likely aftermath and the I don't know, the implications of the worst terrorist attack in Turkish history. At least recent Turkish history, I guess. 128 dead. Jesus. So, Bojan's going to come on and talk about that. And, I don't know, possibly others that I invited on the show will email me back and tell me yes or no. Wouldn't that be nice, huh? Can I get a no? Just tell me no. Like when someone asked Rand Paul, would you pardon Edward Snowden? No. The answer was no. So, like that, just say, no, I can't do it. Oh, man, you know who I should have called is Ray. You know what? I still might call Ray. Well, I don't know. I guess Boyan's going to be on about Turkey, and that's going to be basically the Syria interview. I'm going to do Ray tomorrow. Anyway, I do have an invite out to this lawyer who wrote this really great thing about Tamir Rice. The killing of Tamir Rice, and whether or not he does the show, we're going to talk about that. And I got Afghanistan and Syria and Iran and Ukraine. Oh, man, I got this story about Ukraine that you guys are going to want to hear. So hang around for that. But here, I still got a few minutes, so let me tell you about this story. First of all, the blog is called Simple Justice, a criminal defense blog, and it's written by Scott H. Greenfield. Scott H. Greenfield. He's Scott Greenfield on Twitter. I follow him on there, not very closely, I guess. But Jesse Walker from Reason Magazine retweeted this yesterday, which, hey, Jesse Walker says read something good enough for me. It's at blog.simplejustice.us. blog.simplejustice.us. The article is called Tamir Rice's Basically Reasonable Murder. You may remember that almost a year ago, a 12-year-old boy, a black boy, was gunned down, as they say, was killed by a police officer named Timothy Lohman in a park in Cleveland, Ohio. And the reason why is some pathetic coward called the police on him. Why? Because he's a young black boy playing with a toy gun. As the caller told the 911 operator, I think it's probably just a toy. Hey, did you ever consider maybe you should go home and shoot yourself in the head with a real gun? Did you ever consider that? Tiny pathetic coward who would call the police on a little boy when he already assumes that all the kid is doing is playing? no accountability for him. But anyway, so this coward called the police on this little boy. The cops rolled up and just killed him immediately. Now they want to say, oh, you can't tell in the footage, but he was reaching for it. Well, that's a damn lie. Probably. I don't know. Maybe the footage isn't quite good enough to see exactly what is, it, you know, every slight motion of his arm, his left arm. But even if he was reaching for it, you're talking about a little boy with a toy gun. He obviously wasn't drawing to fire on the cop, was he? The worst you could say, if you were just making things up in order to, you know, presuming the guilt of the deceased in order to justify the cops, the worst you could say is he was trying to show the cop that it was just a toy gun. Look, it's just a toy gun. That would be the only reason, assuming that it's true that he even reached for it at all or lifted his shirt at all to display the gun. It would have been to show, hey, don't kill me, it's just a toy gun. But, oh well, whatever, waistband. So all the cops have to do when they kill a black guy or black child is say, waistband. Oh, Your Honor, you know, I really wish that the dead guy wasn't dead, but check this out. Waistband. Doesn't matter if he had anything in his waistband or not. Waistband is the magic word. Oh, you might have come to understand that it's a style among American blacks, many American blacks, to wear their pants low. And you might think that if someone had to deal with the cops, that they might just reach for their pants in order to pull them up. And you might think that somebody reaching for their pants in order to pull them up isn't necessarily a cause to put a bullet through their heart or their brain, but you'd be wrong. Because this is America, and in America, the cops have the right to murder whoever they want. And they don't even need to really see you reaching for their waistband. They just have to say, waistband. Your Honor, waistband. And they're done. And, yeah, right, like they even have to talk to the judge. They say that to the police investigate that they work for investigating them. Well, Sergeant, waistband. And the sergeant says, oh, that's good enough for me. Notify Internal Affairs. They don't even need to look at this one because he said waistband. Never gets to the judge. Rarely. In this case, the judge said there was probable cause to believe that these cops were guilty of a crime, possibly even murder. But they've now had some outside experts, an FBI agent, and a Colorado prosecutor, both of whom have concluded that Officer Lohman's belief that Tamir Rice, this 12-year-old boy, posed a threat of serious physical harm or death was objectively reasonable, as was his response to that perceived threat. And here the thing is, I spent too much time telling the story. Now I'm almost out of time for this segment. So when we get back, I'm going to cover this more because here's what's so great about this article. And why I like to encourage you to go and read it and share it. He really goes through, this lawyer goes through step by step judicial decision by judicial decision showing why it is almost impossible to prosecute a cop for murder, assuming that the prosecutor, the DA's office, ever even want to prosecute a cop for murder. I mean, again, unless he beats his wife to death on a Saturday night when he's off the clock, that's different. But as long as he's on the clock, he's got at least de facto and sometimes outright sovereign immunity to take our lives, and you'll understand why in just one sec.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime future freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. I do this show. Listen, I screwed up. I meant to stop and talk about how much I appreciate the Texas Millennial Institute and all that in the first segment, but I got right to my first story, and now I'm in the middle of it. So I'll say thanks to the TMI people and all that in the next segment. No, I won't. I guess after the top of the hour or something. I don't know. I got an interview coming up. I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I'm talking about Tamir Rice. So check this out, man. Scott Greenfield writes about why it's so difficult to prosecute a cop, and not just because, of course, they have a monopoly, and you're talking about cops prosecuting themselves and whatever, but the, well, when you listen to these decisions, you'll find out the vastly different scale, quality, quantity of law. You know, as it applies to you compared to as it applies to them. So there you go. It's not that the death of Tamir Rice wasn't tragic, quote unquote, which is as useless a characterization as telling a parent that their brain damaged child is lovely. It was the law. The only constitutional provision at issue when law enforcement officers seize an individual by using deadly force is the first clause of the Fourth Amendment that provides the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. It is significant that the Fourth Amendment does not require a law enforcement officer to be right when conducting a seizure. Rather, the standard is one of objective reasonableness. In Graham versus Connor, 1989, the Supreme Court of the U.S. held that the determination of the reasonableness of an officer's decision to use force must be made from the perspective of an officer on the scene. The court noted that, quote, officers are often forced to make split-second judgments in circumstances that are tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving about the amount of force that is necessary in a particular situation. Now, of course, they could say the same thing about anyone who's in a fight or in a violent confrontation, couldn't they? But they don't. Continuing here. The Supreme Court's exposition of the line between a righteous shoot and a murder is one that easily confuses the uninitiated. Graham versus Connor would appear to require that the officer's actions be judged on the basis of, quote, objective reasonableness. Objectivity sounds good until one realizes what it means when it involves a cop. The practical effect of the Supreme Court's decision in Graham versus Connor and other federal court cases is that those sitting in judgment of an officer's use of force must view the relevant facts from the perspective of the law enforcement officer on the scene. Accordingly, the relevant facts are those facts and only those facts that were available to the officer at the time the decision to use force was made. You know, according to his story now. After acquired information cannot be used to determine the validity, I guess they meant to have a hyphen there, like after acquired, is that a phrase? Of an officer's actions. Moreover, because the perspective must be that of the law enforcement officer on the scene, it is extremely important to look at those relevant facts through the eyes of an officer trained to recognize and react to a threat. This is where objectivity gets twisted. as it's not the reasonable person's idea of objectivity, but the reasonable cop's. And yet, not even the reasonable cop, but the reasonable cop as seen through the eyes of the shooter. And so the word objectivity may be in there, but it's as subjective as it gets. Furthermore, the court concluded that the issue must be viewed from the, quote, from the perspective of a reasonable officer at the scene, rather than with the 2020 vision of hindsight. The investigative reports make clear that, and he's saying the investigative reports into the killing of Kamir Rice, made clear that they would not, quote, Monday morning quarterback the split-second decision. Can you imagine any murder trial of any American civilian who's not a cop saying, Your Honor, this is all Monday morning quarterbacking. How dare you review my actions from the perspective of hindsight is 2020? Investigative reports make clear that they would not Monday morning quarterback the split-second decision made by Lohman to kill Tamir Rice, again a 12-year-old boy, which raises the question of why they bothered to investigate at all. All facts that preceded Lohman's leaping from the car and opening fire almost immediately were ignored, except to the extent they gave him cause to kill. Because that's what it looked like through Lohman's eyes. And that's all the law requires. Video surveillance at the park shows Officer Lohman exiting the vehicle as the individual suspected to be armed reaches towards his right side, waist, and lifts his jacket. Within 1 to 2 seconds of exiting the vehicle, Officer Lohman fired his weapon twice from a distance of 4.5 to 7 feet. Striking the individual in the abdomen. These are block quotes, of course, from the report he's quoting here. Poor decisions were made beforehand? They're not on the table. That the senior officer, Frank Garmbach, would have been wiser not to drive right up to Rice may be true, but that wasn't how it happened. That the dispatcher was told Rice was a child and the gun may not be real was never relayed to Lohman, so he didn't know. The only question was what did Lohman know and see at that instant? The test wasn't whether there were a million options that wouldn't have resulted in Rice's death, but whether there was any way the killing could be justified. By eliminating from consideration any bit of information that didn't support the murder of Tamir Rice, you end up with a report that says killing him was reasonable. By applying case law that bends over backwards to preclude any view that was not the killer's, there can only be one objective... I can't even say it because the ironic quote screw up my pronunciation. There can only be one objectively reasonable conclusion. Yet it still doesn't end there, because no one untrained in the secret tricks of law enforcement has the eye with which to judge whether the actions of a cop were reasonable. The Supreme Court of the U.S. previously recognized the significance of law enforcement training by noticing that when used by trained law enforcement officers, objective facts, meaningless to the untrained, may permit inferences and deductions that might well elude an untrained person. You don't see it, I don't see it, we don't count. Hey, y'all, Scott here. The thing is, I need you guys to help me to get these download numbers up. So do me a favor and sign up for the podcast feeds of this show. You can choose the whole show or just the interviews at iTunes and Stitcher. All the buttons you need are at the top of the right margin at scotthorton.org. The more subscribers I have, the more iTunes and Stitcher will help promote the show to new listeners. If you're a hardcore fan, brand new or from way back, please leave them customer ratings and reviews, too. Trying to get these wars ended. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. On the line, I have Boyan Burimach. You might remember, just interviewed him for the first time a couple of weeks ago. He's a longtime friend of the show. And he is, if I remember it right, if I have it right, a Serbian reporter for a Bosnian newspaper based in Turkey. Welcome back to the show, Boyan. How are you doing? Oh, I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry. Say it now. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good, good. Very happy to have you back on the show. It is a very sad occasion. I believe they're saying the worst terrorist attack in Turkish history. Uh-oh. Toll rises to 128 killed in suicide bombings at Turkish peace rally. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. There was some interruption.
Yeah, I'm not sure whose intelligence agency that was, but they sound pretty amateurish. They're leaning on the buttons with their elbows, I guess. We can hear you guys. Back off a little. All right. Okay, toll rises to 128 killed in suicide bombings at Turkish peace rally. Police attack mourners near site of Saturday blast. That's the headline at antiwar.com. Can you, first of all, just give us the basic facts of who, what, when, and where, as best you know?
Well, it was a rally which was organized by a very marginal of the political life, Federation of Revolutionary Workers Union, and so-called that pro-Kurdish party, HDP, which is HDP, which is basically a political wing of the PKK, Kurdish Workers' Party,
mm-hmm.
which is waging war against the state for now, for the decade. Well, it is a little bit strange that the political party, which is actually the political wing.
I'm sorry, Boyan. I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you for just a second. Is there any way you could try to maybe switch back to that car speakerphone system that you had? Because the microphone on your phone is actually pretty terrible. So
yes, is it better now?
Yes, that is better. It's okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
So it is a little bit strange, if not cynical, that the party which is political party of the organization which declared war on the state on 11 July is organizing a peace rally. But okay, that's what it is all about. Now, the strange thing about this particular terror attack was where few announcements that is going to happen. First is not that important, but it is general threat against the state. Murat Karayilan, the acting leader of PKK, because leader of PKK Abdullah Öcalan is in jail, threatened that the Brigades of Immortal, that is the PKK Brigade of Suicide Bombers, will start actions in metropolises. That was threat which he gave 2 weeks ago. Then, on the Twitter, two strange accounts, less than 12 hours before the bombing happened, actually announced it and described it pretty accurately what is going to happen. I see that in foreign media the it is a little bit spinned that the prime minister just accused ISIS, I mean Islamic State. No, he made a short list of the main suspect organization, and on the top of that is ISIS. Then immediately come the PKK, and after it comes THCP, DHKPC is in the Turkish pronunciation. That is a revolutionary socialist, whatever, one terrorist organization which is active here for few decades, which is often doing the suicide bombings, and ultra-leftist organization, which is active since 2013, pretty much. I mean, they have a suicide bomber in February 2013 against U.S. Embassy.
And which group did you say that was again? Which group did you say that was again?
DHKP/C. DHKP/C.
And you say they're far leftists, but they do suicide attacks like the Islamists?
Yes, well. Didn't you read Professor Pape? I mean,
of course. I've been preaching that for 10 years, actually. But it's interesting.
Yes,
I mean, the PKK doesn't have a history of suicide attacks, though, right? The PKK are more like the Basque separatists.
Well,
they just sort of blow up a wall of a building or something.
They have history of suicide attacks going back to 90s. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I thought the PKK typically would sort of, you know, call in a bomb threat and give people a warning and set off a small bomb more to make a point than, you know, mass casualty attacks.
That's what happened on the 5th of June on a pre-election rally for the Kurdish party in Diyarbakir. Now, I mean, in the last 6 months, we had three major terrorist attacks. All three are blamed on ISIS, but for the first one, which was in Diyarbakir, on pre-election campaign, pre-election rally for HDP, it is now known that it was PKK false flag attack. Then we had that Suruç, which on the 20th of July, that again, I mean, Scott, it is amazing how this in Ankara is just a replay of that attack in Suruç. I mean, in structure and detail, and who are the victims, namely there was also marginal group of revolutionary socialist club federation. Also leftist, also organization was mutual, had the Kurdish party and them.
All right, well, let's hold it right there. Music's playing. We got to take this break, Boyan. So when we get back, y'all, we'll have more with Boyan Budimac, a Serbian reporter for a Bosnian paper in Turkey, talking about the suicide attack that took place over the weekend, the possible suspects, the likely reactions, etc. More in a minute. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, man, welcome back, y'all. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy for the most part. I'm talking with Boyan Burimach, who is a reporter based in Turkey. And we're talking about the massive suicide attack that took place over the weekend. Apparently, nobody's claiming responsibility. And so the suspicions are being cast quite broadly. On all these different possible groups who may have done it, or this or that, the other thing. And of course, everybody seems to have already made up their mind who they want to have been the perpetrator. So that's a big part of the explanations that come out. But so let's start back at the top now. Doesn't look like al-Nusra would have done this because the Turkish government loves al-Nusra, and al-Nusra loves the Turkish government. No reason to think that they would have done this. The Islamic State, I don't know. I mean, I guess that, you know, Turkey still is, I don't know the government, but at least they're allowing the purchase of a lot of black market oil from the Islamic State, supposedly. So there's some kind of mutually dependent relationship there, if not, outright collusion with the Islamic State. It seems like it would be a pretty dumb move on the part of the Islamic State to do an attack like this on the Kurds inside Turkey, but maybe I'm just missing a dynamic that would make that work in their favor. But I don't know whether that makes sense to you under any argument that the Islamic State would have done it, other than just they do have legions of suicide attackers, so that would make it easy for them to have done it.
I doubt that it is Islamic State. Everybody would love it that it is Islamic State because of political correctness, kind of. Namely, but, I mean, Islamic State, that was underreported, but reported. I mean, who wants to know knows that Islamic State declared the war on Turkey. And made the fatwa about Erdogan as an infidel and so on and so on. Anyway, if Islamic State would be capable to organize a so successful terrorist attack in the capital of Turkey, it would claim it immediately. This terrorist attack, all three actually terrorist attacks which I mentioned before are still unclaimed. For Suruç, some media, Murdoch media, claimed that Islamic State claimed it, but there is just their claim that Islamic State claimed. Right. I mean, no video, no audio, nothing.
Well, so do you have your suspicions then, and you think, you know, this is all smokescreen for what exactly?
Well, if we are questioning Kip Bono, this is for me, it is completely regardless of who actual perpetrator is. Because that can be that can be smoke screens as well. It is about inner domestic politics. It doesn't have anything to do with fighting ISIS or Syria or this. No, this is destabilization of Turkey trying to push AK Party, ruling AK Party, into coalition with Kemalists. That is the name of the game.
Into a coalition with who?
With the Kemalists.
Oh, okay.
With the Republican People's Party.
In other words, you think that the secular U.S. pro-U.S. Military types must be behind it then?
Well, Well, they are not pro-U.S., Scott, at all.
Or the U.S. is pro-them?
I mean, well, yes.
I mean, the U.S. certainly prefers the secular nationalists to the Islamists, don't they? In Turkey?
Yes, certainly. I mean, the U.S. prefers army to be in the background, I mean, and all those deals which were off on before AK Party coming to power to continue. Actually, you know what? I mean, in the 90s, Turkey was the second receiver of American army aid, thanks to war with Kurds. And in the same time, second buyer of American weapons. Of course, again, because of war with the PKK. I mean, of course, U.S. wants that all time back. Secularists wants all that time back. PKK wants that all time back. Mm-hmm. So that is, I mean, I told you last time mm-hmm. that this process is, the things that are driving the dynamics of domestic politics in Turkey is the peace process and the prospect of new constitution where everybody who is living inside the Turkey, I mean, the Turkey would be the state of its citizens, not of Turks. Understand me? I mean, right. That is a revolutionary change. I mean, civilian constitution. Well, those two things are driving domestic politics, and everything is revolving about those two things. AK Party is pushing both peace process and changing of constitution. Now, when at least peace process was very close, we have declaration of war by PKK. We have a chaos in the country. Understand me? That is the. I mean, I can't blame PKK. Maybe the PKK is not involved technically in this. Maybe this DHCK did it. I mean, physically perpetrator. But there is a collusion of those forces. I mean, secularist, PKK, Kurdish party, ultranationalists even in the resistance to the reform which AK Party is pushing for.
So you're saying the push is to change the constitution to make it more secular and inclusive, not of Turkic peoples, yes. but of all the people who live inside the country. And the PKK yes. don't want that because that helps the moderate Kurdish factions at their commie terrorist expense.
There was a commission for forming the new constitution, which was working for 2.5 years, and they couldn't agree almost on anything. And why Kurdish party, which was involved in that commission, and commission was completely, fairly. It was not reflection of the. Of the relations of the power in the parliament, but every party had the equal number of commissioners. Kurdish party was rejecting the civilian constitution by which the state would be the state of its citizens with the argument that they want themselves to be a constitutional people inside the constitution. You understand?
I mean, sure.
They wanted the some kind of positive discrimination, you know, which would open then a floodgate, because here 25 why 26 ethnic groups are leaving. You know, just the problem is that Kurds are the biggest one. But if they got exceptional treatment in the constitution, then why not Lads? Why not Arabs? Why not? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Understand me?
Yes. Yeah, so in other words, they're pushing for sort of a ethnic federalism and autonomy based on ethnic factions that would end up tearing the whole country apart, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And that was the blocking the work of that Constitution Commission. And that Constitution Commission was basically, I mean, the work was abandoned some, I don't know, year ago. And it was hoped that by the new system that party will be able to make the switch to presidential system. Now, what is the system now? Now system is bastard system, something between parliamentary and presidential system. Namely, everybody is forgetting that the constitution was written by the army junta, and it was tailored for the coup d'etat leader, General Kenan Evren, at that time. So it is half presidential. I mean, president has a lot of leverages, but after Kenan Evren, no president used it. So people forgot what are the incidences, I mean, what are the rights of the president. But still, it is not presidential, neither it is parliamentarian. So the blockage of the political life is very easy to do here. That's why AK Party wanted to switch presidential system, and it was not the first initiative in the history of Turkey. I mean, back to 70s, that you had those initiatives for pushing for presidential system.
Yeah, sounds like it's better off, you know, not perfect, but status quo is better, you know, to have gridlock than to have any one faction with too much ability to lord it over the others. Get a little bit of checks and balances in there, at least in a de facto sort of sense, it sounds like, no?
Well, I don't know, but it is blocking, and when you see the behavior of the opposition here and how it is not capable even to agree on very simple things which are obviously good for the country just because of the party politics and party rivalism and such, then it might be good that you have some authority who would cut the crap and say, no, we are going this way. Understand me? I mean, still, of course, check and balances, of course, are implying. I mean, they were looking something towards American system. Of course, not one-on-one. I mean, this is a complicating country, and the constitution is complicated historically. It is not short document. It is a huge document, very, very detailed. I mean, kind of law, not just constitution. Anyway, all what is happening, as I said, are just around those two things. Peace with the PKK and changing the constitution. Now, it is good to put this terrorist act in Ankara in that context as well. Mm-hmm. Because there are promises both by other politicians, I mean, political powers with representatives, and also the political powers without representatives. For example, Gulenists are threatening that they will turn the country to ungovernable state if AK party continues to rule alone, you know? And that is kind of happening, actually, now, you know?
Yeah. Man, I sure need to read up on this stuff. I like listening to you, but I just don't know who are good sources to read about what's going on in Turkey.
And I'll have to write you a few long mails because it is interesting, you know, for example.
Well, why don't you write a few articles for us at antiwar.com?
Okay, why not?
Yeah. You said it'd be too difficult to try to translate your journalism with Google Translate or whatever.
I can write in English.
Your emails to me have been great. Absolutely. So, yeah, maybe put something together for antiwar.com.
Okay, no problem. No problem. I'll be glad to.
Cool.
You know, I mean, for example, and that is compatible with the Sybil Edmonds, for example. She knows, I remember her mentioning in one of your shows, she knows about Abdullah Çatlı. Gladio, NATO Gladio.
Oh, yeah.
Now, interesting piece of data which surfaced just 3 years ago, surfaced in the media, the photograph of Abdullah Öcalan, the PKK leader, playing football in the prison with whom? With Abdullah Çatlı. I mean, coincidence.
I don't know, man. Maybe not.
Well, you know, I mean, there are serious questions about the emergence of PKK. If it is not the part of the Gladio or parastate cartels, as I call those things.
Hey, listen. Tell me what you find out about that. I'd love to read about that if anybody's ever really written it up before, or if you get a chance to.
Well, there are hints. There are a lot of hints, you know. And Öcalan, even being in jail now for 15 years, is a so good informed person that it is not normal. That is very, very fishy.
Well, now America certainly supported Turkey's war against the Kurds in the 1990s to great degrees,
yes.
Millions, billions of dollars and weapons and everything to do, I think. So, but that doesn't mean that they, you know, in fact, that may be even more an indication that they created and were friends with the PKK, because that's what you get for being friends of America's bomb to death. Everybody knows that. So, wherever our bombs are falling, those are where our allies live. Anyway, hey, I better go because I'm back on in 1 minute. We're into the break now, but thanks so much for doing the show again, boy, and talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Thanks
okay.
again.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, please write us up an article for anti-war, too. I'll run it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, y'all, that is Bojan Budimac, and he is a Serbian reporter for a Bosnian newspaper in Turkey. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, it's my show, the Scott Horton Show. I hope you guys like those little musical soundbitey intro things at the top of the first and the second hour. That's where the Onion Radio News used to play. And part of the problem with the Onion Radio News is it's the same ones over and over again. I heard your joke once. It's not funny on the 100th time. But then I wonder, that could be the same problem with these musical soundbitey type things, is maybe you guys are getting sick of them. Let me know if you're getting sick of them. Chat room guys, emailers, whatever. I like them, man. I think they're great. They just grow on me more and more all the time. And I'm hoping that the guy that made them, I don't know if I'm supposed to say his name on the radio or not, or the guy that made them, I'm hoping he'll make me some more because they're so dang good, you know, to my ears. But anyway. Okay, so now listen, too much information. That could have been the name of my speech. TMI, the Texas Millennial Institute. Someone in the chat room was pointing out that it's funny that that's their initials because that already means something else. TMI. That was my speech. I really should have either left out the 80s entirely or just gone much faster through the 80s and 90s because then I didn't leave myself enough time for the 2000s and the 20-teens at all, man. And so everything all got sped up and crunched up and skipped over at the end. And when I think back on it, you know, I should have spoken faster, like I just said, and done all the 70s, 80s, 90s stuff, you know, in a more rapid fashion. But I also wish that I just said, you know what? You guys are listening, right? You like this. Give me 5 more minutes. Give me 10 more minutes up here, man. I got to tell you about Yemen real quick. You know, I kind of wish I'd done that. Because they probably would have said, yeah, what the hell? You know, if you got to get up and go to the bathroom, go ahead. You know, I'm going over time, but I'm going over time, damn it. I ain't done here. That's what I should have done. But instead, I stopped. And anyway, I think everybody liked it. Fortunately, there's not video or audio of it. But it's basically everything you heard me say on the show before, I think. I don't know. So you didn't miss too much of my speech. But then again, Ted Carpenter's speech was great. Angela Keaton's speech was awesome, man. It is a felony that nobody recorded, you know, video recorded that thing. That could have been good for your brain. But it was really something. It was about, you know, her attacking the presumption that, you know, serious adults never use accurate language, but only euphemisms and, you know, nostrums and cliches and nonsense when we talk about foreign policy. Mass murder? Little children being exploded to tiny little bits? No, no, no. That's not how serious adults talk about child killing. Blowing babies apart into little bitty bits. No, no, no. And she is saying, F that. Let's all be very realistic about what it is that's going on here. What it is that we're being forced to pay for here. This is really great, man. Really great speech. And Hornberger, of course, was great. And I missed Agata Mukdad. In fact, I need to write that down. I want to invite her on the show to talk about Syria. She corrected me after the thing, and she was right. I didn't argue with her. I didn't even take on new knowledge. I knew she was right before she even said what she said. But she said, you're not right to say that, you know, those different factions in Syria support Assad. They only support the government, the army, the cops, the state. But they don't like him. And I said, no, you're totally right, man. And I'm sorry that I put it that way because I should not have put it that way because I meant to say the regime. That is what I meant. I meant to clarify that actually nobody likes the son of a bitch. Nobody ever did. But if their choice is the state that he rules or a good beheading at the hands of Al-Qaeda, they choose their secular dictatorship in the three-piece suit. That's the important point. And again, part of this was I was running out of time at the end to try to cram in all the things I wanted to say that I just had to leave out half of everything I wanted to say. So that was part of that. But, you know, I have a friend now who is a Syrian Druze. And they're interesting. I asked him, what the hell is a Druze anyway? He said a Druze is part Shia, part Christian, and part Greek mythology. Hey, cool, man. So what's that left over from Alexander? I think he said, I guess it was. That's interesting, man. I don't know. But he said that, nah, of course nobody likes Assad, but they absolutely support the army. Just like Americans don't like Obama, but they like the army, all right, don't they? They don't like George Bush anymore. Or I guess they do more now that he's, now that they miss him. But, boy, do they love the army. My God, do they love the army. Yeah, same with Syrians. And why? Because the army is actually, actually fighting Al-Qaeda for them. Protecting them from getting their heads cut off. Whereas you were never, ever, ever at risk of getting your head cut off, American. They were just lying to you, telling you to be afraid, betting on your stupidity that you would believe them. But, yeah, war is the health of the state, as you could see. And the Al-Nusra Front, you know, the new christened moderate force, why, just a couple of months ago, they massacred a village of Druze for refusing to convert. Al-Nusra, Al-Qaeda in Syria, you know, the American-backed army of conquest, funded and armed, some directly, some indirectly by way of trainees for the FSA who then went over to Al-Nusra. Al-Nusra guys who were pretending to not be Al-Nusra all the time, but they were. Also, factions that had basically been, you know, conquered and absorbed. And then groups that are put on by the U.S. outright. Oh, I left out through our so-called allies like the Turks, the Saudis, the Qataris, who finance them and arm them. But then also, in instances like the newly formed group, the Army of Conquest, which is at least half Al-Qaeda and half the so-called moderate CIA-backed factions, trained and armed and funded factions. Anyway, boy, am I off on a tangent. She was right about how I was wrong, but I was only barely wrong. Well, it is a manner of the way I stated it, really, not my actual point. But anyway, I want to have her on because I missed her talk. I was late to the thing, and I missed her talk, and I did not get to hear everything she had to say. Although I'm told that what she said was, negotiate peace. Now, please stop bombing us in the name of helping us. Can you imagine? These ungrateful Arabs, every time we kill them, then they start whining. We should make them pay the cost of all of our bombs that we send to kill them. So ungrateful. I've been watching a lot of Fox News lately. Anyway, the Texas Millennial Institute, they're nationwide, not, oh, no, they're not. They're Texas-wide, although I think they're working on chapters. They're a breakoff group from the Students of Liberty. That's interesting. And, man, they all seem like a bunch of great guys. So, yeah, I ought to consider that some of the people who were there will be listening to this today or later. So thank you, everyone, very much, especially the group itself and all their supporters and whatever, for inviting me out and having me and listening to me talk for 45 minutes or 50. And to the people who travel there, who came and told me that they came just to see me speak, it was very nice to meet you. Very nice to meet all of you. Thank you very much for coming, for hearing me out. You could hire me to come and give a speech to your group, too. Just give me an email, man. We'll work it out. I may be giving one in Kansas next month, if anybody lives in Kansas. Does anybody live in Kansas? Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Someone asked about the quote at the top of the second hour little montage there. War is the improvement of investment climates by other means. Clausewitz for dummies. That's Ben Kingsley from the movie War, Inc., which, you know, I one time interviewed John Cusack about that movie. Oh, yeah, it was because my now wife knew him and said, hey, you want to interview John Cusack? Yeah. So here's that, and actually I got one more clip of him. It's basically the rest of that same little speech by him to play for you here if you want to hear it.
War is the improvement of investment climates by other means. Clausewitz for dummies.
Wonderful opportunities here, Hauser. As long as these towelheads don't actually look up freedom in the dictionary. But to use one of your own homespun colloquialisms, let's cut the shit, shall we? You know what your problem is, Hauser? You're a moralist. That's why you're so much fun to fuck with.
Oops.
War is the improvement of investment climates by other means. Clausewitz for dummies. The USA is a subdivision of Tamerlane. Democracy, the war on terror, the war on drugs. These are all focus group slogans for Tamerlane. You ever wonder what the ideology of Vibrio cholerae bacterium is, or the belief system of Yersinia pestis, the bacteria that causes bubonic plague? Well, I'll tell you, Hauser. Perpetuation, an infinite succession of generations, immortality on the installment plan. I wish I had that sort of esprit de corps, that bacterial team spirit. Talk about legacy. Talk about empire.
Isn't that great? I think Cusack wrote all that. That's one of those, I do one for me, one for them, and then one for me, one for them, one for me. That was his one for me there. War, Inc. And yeah, when he says Tamerlane, that's Halliburton. Basically, the premise of the movie is it's the first completely outsourced war. So there is no U.S. Army or Marine Corps or Air Force involved. It's all Blackwater and Halliburton basically running the entire thing. And they invade, regime change, Tarakistan. And it's actually not that good of a movie, really, but I really like the Ben Kingsley parts. And there's some funny stuff. There's some funny satire in there, man. You might like it. All right. I mean, hell, Idiocracy ain't any good either, but I love it, so. You know. All right. Oh, man. Yeah, did I really get a chance to thank everybody for the TMI thing? Good enough? Yeah. Everybody who came up and shook hands and said nice things, thank you all very much. That's what I was trying to get to the bottom of there before the break. All right, here's another thing. You can help support this show. It turns out there are people who are willing to travel across the country to see me give a talk for half an hour. So, and I know this, and you know this about the show, the support for the show, it's, about an inch wide, but it's a mile deep. I got fans of the show from all around the world. I got fans of the show going back a decade. I got brand new fans who are kicking themselves that they didn't know all about it all along, or else they could have been listening all along. Sorry, I ain't trying to sound like Donald Trump bragging or whatever, but I'm just saying people tell me these things. So, and I know from the support that I get from the people who help support the show that you guys really mean it. It means a hell of a lot to me. And so now all I'm trying to do is encourage more of you to do the same, because it's simply a matter of multiplication. You know, we get some of these monthly donations come in, $5 here, $10 here, $20 here. Well, you know what? You multiply that by just a few more, and it's a lot more money. And, you know, the cost of living keeps going up here. The cost of anti-war radioing continues on. So, if you like supporting things, support this show. You can do monthly donations. You can do one-off donations. You can get all kinds of free goodies and, you know, our free gift to you kind of, nature of a thing. If you go and look at scotthorton.org/donate, you can read all about the kinds of things that you can get if you help donate and support the show. Like, for example, you could get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks, get, other books, silver coins, all kinds of cool stuff. And then also, I would like to highly and strongly encourage you to advertise on this show. If you have a company, you have a business, you're an entrepreneur, or you're a big corporate fat cat, or you're some kind of something, and you want an excuse to give me money, like maybe I could help make you money by telling people about the business that you're doing. Hey, maybe you've got a nonprofit group, and you say to yourself, hey, actually, the reason for our nonprofit group is so that we can support people who are doing anti-war things. So here's an anti-war thing we could support, could advertise for our group. Veterans for Peace, for example, advertised on the show for a little while there. So that's, you know, something you could think about doing. And yeah, so there you go. Thanks. Advertise on the show. Every new advertiser multiplied by the old advertisers that I haven't lost yet is makes it easier for me to keep doing the show for you. Think of it like this. I've been giving this show away for free for a decade now. Well, 98 on the radio, but online like this since 2003. And I'm going to keep giving it away free. But you could think of it as a way that you can help other people get it for free. Not everybody can afford to chip in. But those of you who can, you're helping other people get what you're getting. And isn't that what you want? Okay. Except for this part, which you can't stand. But the rest of it, right? Okay. All right. So I gotta move on to the thing here, man. Oh, okay. The Benghazi thing. So they got all the new emails now. There's a new batch of emails coming out. And this is important. You know I don't sit here and cry about the lack of security at the place or whatever, you know. Long time it took for the rescue operation, these bogus scandals about Benghazi. That's not my point, never has been. But the Libya war itself, holy crap! The Libya war that also got the ambassador killed and the covert operation to funnel the Mujahideen and guns from Libya on to the next regime change in Syria and all of that in 2011 and 12. Wow. Now, there's a scandal. You want a Benghazi scandal? Let's talk about running guns for Al-Qaeda, huh? Okay, so, but here's another part of the scandal that this is important. We know that Sidney Blumenthal, Max Blumenthal's father, was a very close confidant of Hillary Clinton all along, and that in the emails, he's emailing her all the time, and that he helped to hector her into this war. But here's the thing about it, too. Tyler Drumheller, the guy that disproved Curveball and the bogus biological weapons labs in Iraq. Tyler Drumheller, who disproved Iraq Al-Qaeda ties. Tyler Drumheller, who was on 60 Minutes explaining about Najee Sabri, the informant inside the Iraqi government, who verified they had no weapons of mass destruction before the war ever broke out. That Tyler Drumheller, former CIA officer in Germany, he was making money representing companies as a contractor that were sure, they thought at least, to profit from the war. And Blumenthal was representing him. And a lot of the crap that he was telling Hillary was what Tyler Drumheller, who had a vested interest in it, was telling him to say. Yeah, so how do you like that? Back in a sec again. Sorry. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism vs. Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism vs. Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I know you guys listening to the archives later on, you don't hear the bumper music, so it sounds ridiculous the way there's so much dead air at the beginning of all these segments, but we're all listening to Jodie Foster's Army play the Charlie Brown theme song. Is that not the greatest name for a band ever? If you don't see why, then you don't know why. But for the rest of us, it's hilarious. All right. Oh, man. Afghanistan. Taliban has most territory in Afghanistan since 2001. UN-based UN report based on early September before the fall of Kunduz. So, I'm trying to remember exactly where it was I read where they... Maybe I have it here. I read a thing where they named all the provinces that are under Taliban control as of right now. It was very specific. What the hell was it? You know, it might have been the Washington Post thing that's on antiwar.com right now. Where is it? By evening a hospital, by morning a war zone. That's a Washington Post story. That's actually a pretty damn good write-up. I'm not going to page through this whole article while I'm blabbing here, but it's on antiwar.com in the top headlines right now. It's a pretty good write-up of what happened there. The war crime, the attack on the hospital there. Taliban doing better than ever. NATO commander backs independent investigation into hospital attack. That's interesting. I wonder if he got permission to say that just so that they could still not do it, but make it look like if even if the U.S., well, it's General Breedlove is a U.S. general. Although, you know, Breedlove says a lot of stuff that I'm not so sure always comes from D.C. He's sort of his own little, got his own little empire over there, doesn't he? I don't know. Anyway, he told interviewers that Doctors Without Borders had every right to ask for an international humanitarian fact-finding mission. He and NATO are going to support it, he said. That ain't going to happen. I highly doubt. Although, I don't know, man. Doctors Without Borders, they've got some friends somewhere, but I can overcome a Pentagon cover-up? Come on. And then here's the much more important one. NATO leaves door open for troops to remain in Afghanistan. This is the Associated Press from the 8th. Urged on by the U.S., NATO is open to keeping more troops in Afghanistan than initially planned after 2016. They were lying. They knew they're staying forever the whole time. Obama already signed a thing to stay till 2024. He signed that back in 2010. Or maybe 11. No, I think 10. Urged on by the U.S., NATO is open to keeping more troops in Afghanistan than initially planned, But officials said Thursday the alliance is waiting for the Obama administration to announce its decision. Sounds like they've already made it. And then this is interesting here. Pentagon to pay the families the condolence payments of a measly couple of thousand dollars. We're so sorry that we blew up your husband, wife, mother, father, child. Here's $1,500. Go and F yourself. Love America. You wonder why they hate us. I hear they hate us because we're such decent folk, you know? Always minding our own business. Only ever using violence and self-defense. Just drives them crazy. And here's the thing. Everybody knew that thing was a hospital. You read pretty much anything about this. Or just look at the picture. They have it at The Intercept. Or just Google the Kunduz MSF. That's Medicines Sans Frontiers. Doctors Without Borders Hospital in Kunduz. And it's this... You can't mistake this building for any other building. They knew it was a hospital. They knew they were attacking it. The Afghans called in the strike to the U.S. Special Forces on the ground who approved the strike to the C-130 that attacked the hospital for an hour, flying around and around in circles, just blasting them with their Vulcan cannons and their howitzer, burning little children to death in their beds. Slaughtering surgeons. and they knew what they were doing, but guess what they had decided? We want to. So they did. Oh no, that can't be. It's just like a police shooting. We all know that if a cop kills someone, it's because he had to. They are not just presumed innocent. They are presumed innocent beyond a shadow of a doubt, and there's nothing that you could ever do to prove otherwise, no matter how much proof you have. The fact that it was Americans that bombed the hospital means there must have been some mistake at worst. Because, you know, we're civilized and they are the barbarians. And everybody knows that. And that's it. First of all, Your Honor, just look at them. They got brown skin. If you can't understand a word they're saying, they believe in some weird back-ass words, blasphemous religion. So, obviously, somebody over there was no angel and deserved to be killed. And the rest is just collateral damage, just like they claimed in the beginning. Oh, that was just collateral damage. Yeah. That's what you call a human being murdered by the U.S. government. Collateral damage. Israeli Defense Minister urges summary executions. Oh, I'm skipping to Israel now. Israeli Defense Minister urges summary executions. Kill stone throwers, quote, on the spot. Boys throwing rocks at armored soldiers who are occupying their land should be killed on the spot. The nation, he said, the Israeli government, that is, the money that they took out of your paycheck, the veto your government provides at the UN Security Council, needs to liquidate these boys. Quote, immediately and on the spot. Liquidate. This is the defense minister of Israel. Yaalon is urging all Israeli civilians to carry guns so that, and he's talking about the colonists on the occupied West Bank. He's urging all Israeli civilians to carry guns so they can shoot Palestinian terrorists on sight, saying the important thing in all cases is that the terrorists are shot dead and our people aren't. Indeed, a video has been making the rounds of Israeli police shooting an Israeli Arab woman at a bus station after she puts her hands up, with Israeli defense officials warning the video could fuel unrest across the country. They can kill women and children. Hey, they're Israel. They can do whatever they want. Israeli stabs four Arabs in southern Israel. Man was, quote, known to police before incident. That's also at news.antiwar.com. And then check out this one. The deputy defense minister says Palestinians will never have a state and will be ruled by Israel. Israel's deputy defense minister, Eli Ben Dahan, said yesterday Palestinians have to understand they won't have a state and Israel will rule over them. This is the same guy who in 2013 said to me they are animals, they aren't human. A Jew always has a much higher soul than a Gentile, even if he is a homosexual, he said. That's the deputy defense minister of Israel. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Oh, man, I almost started talking about how much I hate Rand Paul for a second there, but no. Go to Mondo Weiss if you want to see the bad news about Israel-Palestine going on right now. Here's video of Israelis slaughtering seven, I think almost all of them were kids anyway. They're all young men. And at least in the footage I saw, it's only boys throwing the rocks. But more than them getting shot, I guess. And it's just ridiculous. These armored soldiers. And it's boys, 15-year-old boys maybe, throwing rocks at them. Call them stones, makes them sound bigger, like the stone that you would make a house out of or something. Must weigh at least 25 pounds or whatever. No. They're throwing rocks. And the Israelis just kill them. And that's because Palestinians, according to the Israelis, are lesser humans. They just don't have the right to live. They don't have the right to own property. As a rabbi, how do you say it? I always say it wrong. Kahane, the right-wing fascist rabbi. I remember seeing a video of him on 60 Minutes where he goes, look, I'm not a Jeffersonian. You keep asking me about whether these Palestinians, don't they have rights and all this? No. It's me and my group versus them, and they can all die. Understand? I do not believe that all men are created equal and have natural rights like the right to their life. That's a bunch of crap, said Rabbi Kahane. He said, I want the West Bank to belong to me. And whoever has to die because they're in my way, they can lay down and die. And that is Israeli policy. Grand theft country. That's like America versus the Red Indians, which Americans nowadays all at least say they're sorry about. That's kind of an ugly part of our history. Jeez, you realize this continent we live on, there were people who already lived here. And not necessarily our ancestors. I think, probably many of you, like me, your ancestors all got here in the 20th century, But anyway, the 19th century Americans, some of them anyway, the state in the 19th century virtually exterminated the entire population. A lot of it was disease, but a lot of it was genocide. And people look at that and go, man, that's horrible. I mean, I guess there's no Indians, no Comanche around for me to give this land to right now. There's no Comanche suing because they're all dead. And they don't have the right to sue for their land back where they used to live. Horrible as it is, hey, it's a fait accompli. It's hundreds of years old, and at least we look back on it now with regret, in that sort of collective guilt sort of a way. But so what about Israel is acting like just little 19th century America right now? Colonizing and exterminating the local indigenous population. The thing of that is that was all outlawed in spirit and in letter after World War II. America won that war and said that Hitler had ruined colonialism for everyone forever now. And that was it. You're not allowed to invade people's land and expand your border and conquer it. And if you do, by golly, we will pass a UN Security Council resolution against you and probably invade you. Because we are the enforcers of the world law that say Lebensraum is not a good enough excuse to start a war.
and we'll prove it to you by launching a war against you. Right? Isn't that what happened with Iraq and Kuwait? You are not allowed to expand your borders by force. Watch, we will push you right back inside your borders again. Bang, 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 bang. That's the law. And because why? Because of Hitler. Because of the Nazis who said, well, we'll just kill everybody in Eastern Europe, enslave the rest, and, you know, have more room for our civilization instead of theirs, because screw them. And then the world rejected that. And the European empires mostly came home after that. And the American empire was sold in the name of not colonialism, but in protecting the world from the Soviet Union. That kind of helped to obfuscate matters a little bit. But really what had happened was America had inherited the world empires. And they don't do it the same. It's not the same where they just steal all the wheat and starve all the Indians. But they sure do bribe, beg, borrow, cajole, and steal in subtler ways. They build bases. They do coup d'etats. They make trade deals and do it in a way where it doesn't look quite like the old British colonialism, but it's certainly still empire. But anyway, so this is what the whole world claims to not believe in anymore, including the British, including the Americans, who always have some other excuse. But in Israel, you're supposed to just think that this is perfectly fine. I read you this quote. This is the Deputy Defense Minister of Israel. Can you imagine if the Deputy Secretary of Defense of the United States of America had said about anyone, to me, they're like animals. They aren't human. And, I mean, this is comical. It's so completely insane. A Jew always has a much higher soul than a Gentile, even if he is a homosexual. Yeah, I don't believe in that. And you know what? Here's the thing. Western civilization, since the end of the 18th century, has rejected that kind of thinking. I mean, in fits and starts. But what we believe now, right, everybody? Is that all men, all human beings, have the same natural rights as each other. That's it. Doesn't mean we're all the same in every way. It just means that none of us have any more rights than anyone else does. No one has authority that is not duly delegated to them by free people who have made a conscious choice. That's what we believe in America, isn't it? It says so in the Declaration of Independence. But, yeah, no, man. Well, and that's, no, it doesn't just say that, but that's what Americans all claim to believe. Left, right, and center, and libertarian, and everybody else. We believe in natural right. Actually, you can find some liberals who reject that. Conservatives typically call them God-given rights, but same difference. There's no distinction worth fighting about there. But anyway. The Palestinians. This is what Americans don't understand about Palestinians. They don't understand this. And Palestinians, hey, cut Americans a little bit of slack, man. They're watching TV. They're functionally illiterate. They don't know. They just don't know that the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem were all conquered in 1967. And that the populations there have not been, you know, transferred like they were in the Nakba of 48. They've not been forced marched. They're still there. They're just under permanent military occupation. 48 years and running. Longer than the USSR occupied Eastern Europe after World War II. They have no rights. You hear, see, what helps confuse the issue is you hear about Hamas rules Gaza, the Palestinian Authority rules in the West Bank, but that's not true. They're just the trustees on the inside of the prison, but they're not the warden. They're not the real cops on the outside. At the 972 Mag, There's a guy named Noam Shazoff. That's it. Noam Shazoff. And he wrote a thing for Slate one time explaining that Gaza is a maximum security prison. The West Bank is a minimum security prison. But that ain't much of a comparison. You look at what the Israelis and their colonists get away with on the West Bank. I don't think that's minimum anything. If it was happening to you, you would be at war. That's the truth. That's what TV never explains to you. Israel is Goliath. The Palestinians already lost 50 years ago are a conquered, beaten, subject people. They have the right to resist. The Israelis have none.